Welcome to the 10th episode of Grand Tao Podcast with Pooja. With me, I have Sneha Manoj, who is a very lovely friend and also a very, very impressive girl. She is a makeup artist and also specializes in SFX makeup, which we will talk about. But firstly, welcome Sneha. Welcome to the podcast. Hi, Jo, thank you so much for having me today. And it's lucky to have you here. And maybe you want to tell a little bit about yourself so that I'm not on the edge. See how that
anything. Okay, so I am a makeup artist. I've been doing special effects and beauty makeup for, I want to say, over 10 years because it's been 12, 13 years. I just stopped counting after 10 because it makes no sense to count after 10 unless you hit like 50 or 20. But I started off with special effects makeup. I really like the show called The Walking Dead. That you'd seen that. It's about zombies. And I'm so intrigued by how those zombies were created. And I would just practice with tissue paper and Fevicol. I'll just my mom's makeup. I would steal and I would create looks. And then after that, I got into theater makeup in school and then college. And then did a lot of street plays and theater plays. Because we had a lot of school competitions. And then I got into beauty makeup after that. Usually the other way around. I went backwards into quit.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure it's not a very mainstream thing to just pick up makeup and say, hey, I'm going to do special effects makeup today because I'm into arts and crafts. I'm sure this interest stemmed from somewhere. So what did you do primarily and why did you decide this is it?
I really liked art. I liked creating things with my hands. So sculptures, paintings, drawings. You know how everyone is sitting in class, you're just drawing that eye, that very mysterious eye. That was me for a long time. And I was just I really liked creating designs out of just paper and
chapati tortilla. Just random things. I like to keep sculpting and doing things with my hands.
Yeah. So from there, I just took it to, I realized that there was makeup. I saw my aunt's makeup kit and my mom did that much makeup, and the little she had, I was just like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and what was your education background with you before the makeup world?
Right, so I really was interested in being a bakery technician, in a bag, but I got a lot of, told no to that. So I became an architect because that was very art related and I could go in and do things like sculptures and all of that. And I studied architecture. I worked as an architect and I would bunk college and work and I would go do this because it was just fun. It was so much more interesting. And I liked meeting people. Architecture was great because we went for so many excursions. We got to learn from the artists themselves. But the work environment I was going to, it was so 9-to-5 cubicle, plan. It was just copy-paste, plan. It was boring to say the least. So I just I would bump the work and I wouldn't care. I used to be I'm good with this. And then they'd beat up my Instagram the next day. I was at a zombie walkathon or something like that. I was always during October. That was October, November was always my busiest months because there would be bridal and Halloween. So it was a lot of fun. And all of this was in Dubai. So none of that was it was just a lot of fun. It wasn't in India where it was constricted. It was meeting people of all kinds of backgrounds. It was a lot of fun.
Architecture must have been a series of things where, you should have probably seen not just in terms of art, but also in terms of structural understanding, in terms of perspectives. It seems like there was more substance to learning it and executing architecture in terms of an architect. So what is the one thing that you did with your architecture career that you did enjoy doing? So you did learn those.
Okay, so there was a lot of debt in that subject. You learned a lot by the inspectors, as he said. There was a lot more to it than just speak, but one part of it that I really liked was this class called BISCOP, Visual Communication and Visual Arts, where you learned patterns and colors, what colors went well together, all of that. That wasn't something I was exposed to in school during art class, or I never looked into it. So I learned a lot in that, and I also learned the mindset of an artist, because architects, if you met any, are very snobby. It's there. And just learning to hold yourself in a high regard as an artist is very important. You need to be a little sloppy when you know that it's your mind doing so much of the work, and you can just transform that physically, like you can just create things. And that's pretty cool, I think. So being a little snobby is also something I learned from architecture school, which I really got close to my heart, which isn't the thing that people usually associate.
And what about your reverse equation, right? Like then you came back to Chennai, where you're from, and where we are at the moment. So how did you feel when you're in the sea of, you know, some of the oldest architecture in the world, like some of this, like, you know, highly religious or culturally, ethically inspired to an era where it is almost as old as the Roman Empire, right? So how did this architecture have an impact on your advanced study?
Seeing the colors that's used in South Indian architecture, it's beautiful because you can see that juxtaposition in the British era architecture that's there in so many of the buildings over here. That's all like ministry, then buildings, government official buildings, all that, versus the temples and certain houses and all of that. It's beautiful, like a check in our houses. Seeing the details they put in for something as simple as cooling the house because ACs were in there. The different ways that they implement in that cell was really interesting because it wasn't just a courtyard design or that. It could be something as simple as just using pots on top to cool it, and then how they turn that into design or see through concrete for different aspects to show shadows and see. So I feel like I'm also jumping a lot of points. There's a lot more if you actually look into the architecture in South Zambia. It's very interesting, especially when you see how they depict gods over here. Because God worship is so large in India, especially in South India. The way they just clean everything, keep it pristine, and they always keep up all of that, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and I do agree. And I feel like now is the right time to jump into your aspect of like makeup artistry and the color scheming and all of that. So you did speak a bit about like how colors worked in general, right? Like you use, I've been on your canvas once, multiple times, multiple designs. Theory actually one design, so very fortunate. And I do know that all of this theory comes from an actual understanding of color theory. So what would you say was your biggest kind of like shock when you did know that if you mix these two color schemes, you get this third color or a scheme that you just couldn't like imagine like is possible?
Yeah, so there wasn't much of a shock when it came to Alpadatiya. Gurumukhins itself, we saw like primary colors, secondary colors. But what did surprise me a lot is the way I perceive colors versus the way other artists perceive colors. Because when I see a comparison of colors, right, I see the shades and the hues, I see what goes well together. What I preference is so vastly different from what I see other artists use. And then trying to shift and trying to work in terms of what the other artists use, I can see how my body and my mind is just not comfortable with it. So that gives me even more of like, it just helps me learn more that there's so much more to art than just, okay, I feel like I worked as an artist for 10 years. I should know by now that this color goes in this too. But there's so many more ways that the colors can be used. And that's very interesting to me, to see how an other art, see how other artist perceives it versus how I perceive. That was definitely a big shock to me because sometimes there are times when I knew that I'm colorblind because I would see something that's light pink and another artist might give this completely different color. So.
And why do you get that? It's,
I don't know. I just feel like that. Just, I honestly feel like because would this be something like a brown eyeliner, right? They might pair it with a different lip color, but I might pair it like a older lip. And what they do looks great, but what I do, I'm actually like, oh, it might look a little incomplete. Maybe it looks more balanced when there's a like a color or something like that. So I feel like that balance is so important, and the way they perceive it and the way I perceive it is so different. But then again, art is subjective, and I feel like that's something that's so very important to know.
And that's beautiful about art, right? They're so subjective, and it does not have any standard. But again, that comes to the next part of my questions and also your next part of your career journey from an architect to a makeup artist to also specializing in something that was not very popular, you know, and at least in the South Indian aspect of nudies or things like that. So SFX. So what is SFX? It's SFX. And where did you learn it?
I'm Sarah Todd.
I studied for 5 years. Time that goes like this. I used to just watch a lot of YouTube videos. I've gone and assisted a lot of artists, even makeup. I'm not learned here anyway. I assisted a lot of artists. I feel like that helped me a lot more in my career, because seeing the way artists work at a specific location, at a specific gig, versus when you go to a classroom and you're learning ABC, it's so different, because now I know how to work when I'm in a similar situation. All I know how to take on my bowler when I'm in a complete different situation. I think that's so vital to it.
Right, so you applied. SFX was so, like, almost foreign. The only person who was regarded highly for special effects was Kanun Hassan Kier and Shankar, the director. The director also would have other artists fly in, which was very rare that you would have an upperperson fly from another country. Even now in South India, there aren't many SFX artists. There's like a handful. Having one of the only studios in Chennai is also pretty crazy, because not a lot of people know about that. And I love it when certain artists are like, no, let's use South Indian artists to create a South Indian movie or South Indian artists for like a South Indian movie. I like that kind of, I won't say ethos, but just I like that kind of feel to it, instead of like having someone else, because you had someone over here who does very similar things or sometimes even better. So that's pretty cool to know. That being said, yes, it's such a vast field, because when you say SFX, there's so much from prosthetics to creature creation. You can literally just go to it baking, like punching hair into different like legs, hands or wigs, or just like making lenses, which is something people aren't aware of. Like creating creature lenses or character lenses, which could be like a blood-infused trauma. Just like blood vessels that are ruptured behind. Creating lenses for that. So there's so many niches in this one thing that people aren't even aware of. And I feel like if more people are aware of this, it can be so much more interesting.
I think the clefacious aspect of the fact that my head around factory is thread, like three things now. You said prosthetism, and then you said creature. I feel like these are things that, like, even though it sounds like a tongue twister even to me, they're very intricate. So you have to tell us, what is this creative or a creature creating?
Okay, so when the easiest way to describe this is when a director or a writer comes to you with a document, with a story. You read the story, but you also start reading between the lines. So if they say that there was a man who was standing on the side of the road and he was smoking a cigarette, and then he just like put the cigarette off and walked to this thing, you need to think about the fact that if he's an avid smoker, he's going to have smoker's lines, and he's going to have yellowing on his hands because of the fact that he's regularly using a cigarette. Such small aspects. Now, does that person work a labor job? So we need to consider how his nails would be. So creature creation or character designing, is it just creating a dragon? It's even creating a character as simple as a tribal. So understanding the fact that maybe he doesn't have the time to like chase, your is overgrown, his hair might be a little messy. So such small aspects, because if you watched the show like Bridgerton, if you've seen certain storylines in that, or actually a lot of movies like How to Use a Guide, Telltales, rom-coms also, there's so much character designing in that, where in the beginning, when the character is not in love, she has straight hair. And then when it top, it's like this romantic waves and curls, which you wouldn't even realize, but subconsciously, it's like, you know, how much softer the character has become. It also bleeds into fashion designing. That part of it is styling, because if you see characters in the beginning when they're using very high contrast colors, very dark colors, even for makeup, and then they go to much softer tones to show how romantic and soft they've turned. All of that is something you need to take into consideration and think about when you're doing character creation, character designing, creature designing, because creature designing also. So you'll start designing, right? They come and tell you that it's a creature that lives in the dark and lives in the caves. So you need to understand that the eyes need to be a certain way.
the ears need to be a certain way. Like, if it's in the dark, that means it uses its ears a lot more than its eyes. Its eyes wouldn't work as much. It would be more nocturnal, which means it would be fully blacked out because your eyes expand when it's dark around because you're trying to capture as much light as possible. So thinking of all these things, you wouldn't even think about these things usually when you're watching a movie, but then there's so much work that goes into it.
Yeah, it's beautiful, like in narrating, right? There's so much depth to it and there's so much to learn about it. There's also a large number of things that go into the creation in itself, like process or like, I don't know, you maybe using plaster of Paris or whatever the substance and the ingredients are to mount this image or the character. If there is a creative character or a superficial character, and then you have to bring it to life, right? So what are the kind of harmful substances that go into special effects that you have to pick? Okay, this is not for Endumana.
It's definitely not for everyone because it ranges from just simple beauty makeup products to plastic. Like, you literally have liquid plastic that you can make. You mix certain compounds. You can make, like you said, plaster of Paris, electrician product, use a resin, silicone. There's so many different things. When you say silicone, you just fondly think like, oh, like the silicone face bag. No, there's like certain components of A and B that you mix in certain parts, and then you like cast it and all of that. It's a beautiful wide variety of things that you can jump into. Even for hair, people would think like, oh, it's just natural hair, and there's fiber hair, there's synthetic hair. There's so many different types of hair which has different textures that you think too much into when you see a creature. You would think like, oh, the paws of this creature have like synthetic hair. Maybe it's like, you need to think about the fact that it's crypt a certain way because water patches, it needs to be water repellent and all that. So you use a lot of harmful chemicals in order to get some of these textures out. And there's a lot of like PPE that's used because most of these things are also very reactive chemicals. So you can burn yourself. You're inhaling a lot of microplastics. So it has most of the things that are done outside. And when you're doing it on someone, when you're casting someone's hand or face and all that, there's a protective barrier that the person who's getting it done has to apply. There's also, if you're claustrophobic, if you're getting cast, you need to like keep them calm because the entire face is just cast over. And then like they won't be able to breathe except through the two holes. So there will be like these 10-second gap where they completely closed off everything. We can't hear anything because they're trying to protect all of those parts. The eyes, cameras, and all that stuff. And then they can start breathing once you open up the nostrils and all of that. So it's dangerous for sure, but it's also so interesting because it's not just art. There's so many chemical things that you have to think about. There's so much math that goes into it. So yeah.
So yeah, the math aspect probably makes the most sense, right? Like, because if, like everything in life, it all adds up, and yes.
But also, it's a lot like when your mom goes into the kitchen and she's cooking and you're like, oh, how many tablespoons of salt figure I have? Which is like, tablespoons of salt? You just like, iron it, you would do it. Because, yes, certain things, there are certain measurements, but you're at a point where you're an artist for so long, you just know what goes well. Yeah, that comes with experience. So path is important in certain aspects, but mostly with experience, you start understanding what works, what doesn't work.
Yeah, with experience. So you also have a lot of experience. And I'd like to know what you also have been in the beauty industry. You've been catering to celebrities, to brides, and a lot of like beauty-specific makeup and all of that. I'm sure this is the more relaxing part of your job where you get to dress people up. But that gives a lot of happiness, not just to themselves, but to you, because you see in it products, you know, within a few hours, right? So how is it working in the beauty industry, and how do you feel it is in today's term? Because as a makeup artist, I'm sure, you know, with India specifically, people are, you know, coming to terms with all sorts of skin tones. Because even with the Indians, we have very highly pigmented skins, we have not so vibrant skins. We are a huge pine tree.
There is so much diversity. We also have migration, not to an amount of different continents, but like even within the states. So, and now I feel like the beauty standards are there, and there's more inclusivity and there's more acceptance, more than inclusivity. So what's the trend behavior? What do you see with your brides, and what do you feel like you'd like
In the beginning, you'd said something about seeing the work in a couple of hours, and that's so true for me because as an architect, I would design buildings and it would be constructed now. Like things that I worked on 10 years ago, it's coming up now. So that's pretty crazy for me because I was so impatient. If I made something, I wanted to see it now and I wanted that instant satisfaction, and that's something makeup gave me. I would do the work, like beauty, makeup, sculpture, anything, and I would get people's feedback really soon versus waiting like months and years to see your construction come to life, right? So when it comes to India's standards of beauty, so much, I would say so much better now, because before it was like a tunnel vision, like beauty was just this, which was fair skin and a lot of cool tones, surprisingly, which you wouldn't think of back in like the 90s or even early 2000s, like the very white kid thing. Now there's a lot more variety that's there and that's available. So many brands have entered in the beauty space, which is amazing because they understand that there is a market over here that people are buying. The consumer rates is so much higher over here. And they know that beauty in India is just kicking off, which means the brands, there's so many indie brands that are starting off, just insane to see, because you can see that people understand how there is that hunger for makeup, for beauty, for lifestyle brands and all of that. So, and it's all being catered to, and that's great because when you see a child, and something as simple as like a child having curly hair, which earlier, like even 5-10 years ago, curly hair wasn't catered to at all in India. Now there are so many brands and catered just to curly hair, which is amazing. Fix My Curls, Moxie and all of that, which are also indie based brands. So it's catering to not just curly hair, but also Indian hair, which is very different because if you know anything about Indian hair, you would know that it's also one of the most expensive hair that's available in the market breakout. You're going to buy like wings and all of that. When it comes to makeup, there's so many fashion brands coming in with a variety of skin tone ranges that are available. Because earlier, if you go into any of the drugstores over here or any of the makeup stores, even now, kind of, you would find only light, medium light, very, very light in the foundation or concealer range. Now, it's a little bit darker, but online, all the other ones are available. You have the darker, the skin tones also, which is amazing because when you just open up social media now, you see so many dark skin creators, and it's so good to see that because it's showing so many young people like, hey, you can also do this kind of makeup. You can also use these shades of lipstick for yourself. Because otherwise, there's a thing I would say, I'm speaking from experience, where my darker skinned minds would feel like only dark men's lipstick stuff. And that Michael lipstick would always wash them up. No, there's so many different shades and hues and undertones that you pick into consideration when you're picking in something as small as a lipstick, because that's the most commonly used thing. I feel happy, but it is not a lip up, it's a lipstick. You don't have foundation, that's fine. At least in India, it's a kajal and a lipstick that anyone goes towards.
Yeah.
And just the variety is available in India now. Different brands catering to, like, there's black kajal, there's a brown kajal, there's holographic eyeliners. There's so many, you can think that's pretty cool to see everything available.
And what are some of the makeup products that you do look for? Like, for example, like, I'm sure there are makeup artists that are like, okay, I am a nature surveillance. I am conscious about environment building makeup, but that means that they should be not buy such products because, you know, it is from a level that is not, you know, provided within us funds or resources or certain things like that. I mean, I'm sure, you know, with Woodstein, you are asked to accept many things because you are in a cautious aspect of things, because sometimes you do bring in your own stuff and sometimes inside the meat. So, but if there are brands that you would like to talk about in terms of that they're making honestly more conscious, you know, it's not just for your skin, because skin gets such huge pain today. Everybody owns a daycare test, you know, everybody is investing in it. And it's wonderful because that is even a better investment. So what would you say? What are some of the makeup products that today's terms?
Yep, because it's cruelty-free makeup, there's vegan makeup, there's so many other things to consider when you're manufacturing makeup. But one thing I've noticed as a professional artist is also, you can be two types. Actually, there are many types, but two of the main things is you're going to go fully cruelty-free, or you can go the way where you're not going to look too much into it.
When you say not going to look too much into it, it's only because there's a large market that is there in China. And in China, if you have to enter the market, you have to do animal testing, or you need that animal testing mark. So there are brands, really high-end brands, most of the big brands that do animal testing, and it's unethical, but it's what the stamp requires to be sold over there. There are a lot of amazing indie brands and international brands are also there that don't do animal testing, which is an amazing alternative to this entire thing. It really depends. It varies from artist to artist. I love certain brands that are indie and non-ethical, that are ethical, like NYX Cosmetics, more of that. Because they have a variety of products for almost every skin tone, from almost any skin type, who is that? So I'm just glad that that really is available to the people for them to make a very conscious choice. And they know that if they can, there are so many websites also now where you can check to see if a certain brand still tests on animals. And there are so many brands that are stopped testing on animals also. One brand that's been very conscious all through is Kat Von D Beauty. So it's really cool to learn about these brands.
Yeah, and my next question also that, because you spoke about manufacturing and makeup, like how the makeup industry or products is just you. You have worked with a very, very young celebrity of late, and you have been closely associated with most of our makeup products and projects. And one of the popular southern celebrity named Nayakara, she also has makeup brand. She's skincare. Yeah, she has a skincare brand. So have you worked with for a skincare brand? And what do you feel that celebrities are bringing to their, other than themselves as a brand thing, do you also see, not just with Matt, there are several other celebrities across the world that do get into the space of things? Maybe because they work constantly with it for their projects, for their work, etc. And then they think that's a vital investment to me and to say it across that the unique invests. For example, in India, we're constantly influenced by not just celebrities, but by lifestyle choices, because the society as a whole, we're growing and becoming more wealthier as a country, as an Asian, etc. So we're constantly working to associate ourselves with taking spread out on a longer term, a better investment. And with skincare product reach like Nayakara's, what do you feel that they're trying to like put across, and what do you think is the important meeting?
So I always think it's very interesting when women enter business spaces, and I'm always up for that, because if you see a lot of the top brands, it's led by men, it's owned by men. So when women enter that space, they will shake up the market, and they do enough research because they're using the products. They know what products, what ingredients work for them, what ingredients they would eat, or that's the way they are inculcating it. So women in business is something out of this path, because most of the times it's ethical, they know what they're doing, and they're doing it out of a need, not because it's profit driven or anything like that. So coming to celebrity owned brands, there are so many in India, and it's really up to the consumer to make up their mind, because there's also so much information up there as to what ingredients work well together, what ingredients don't work well together, what might work for them, what's not necessary for them, none of that. So it's up to the consumer as to what they want to consume. But it's great that there's a range available to them now, especially from the South, and one of the biggest stars is putting out something that's so accessible to everyone, not just her fans. It's not just like, you know, specific to her fans. It's for absolutely anyone, and it's unisex, the products. It's not like skincare, it's just for women or anything like that. Anyone can use it. And I think that's pretty cool, especially with Kanyu, like face mask and all that. That's something that's quite new to the market, like the one where you put it on and then you sleep on, like, and then it's up here. So it goes on white and then it becomes clear. Such products are really cool because it's not just like a marketing gimmick. It's pretty good for skin too.
And what's your top favorite, say, ingredient that you do in terms of skincare on your brides and your celebrities or any aunts in general?
Skincare ingredient?
Yeah.
Peptides. I love peptides because it's what helps create that strong barrier of the skin. That's very powerful when you're using a lot of makeup and you're continuously scrubbing and cleaning your skin. And not just that, you would have seen me through this entire interview just constantly touching my face.
that's like transferring germs and just rubbing off the top layer of my skin. So that's like also microexfoliation that I cling to it. Now, peptides and collagen, all of that helps boost the building, the barrier building protective layer of the skin. And that's so important. People take it for granted, but that's actually important because you won't realize how sensitive your skin is until you go to that point where you have like red patches or you're breaking out or you easily get pigmentation. It could be because of the sun, it could be because of a pimple, it could be just because like mascara over here, which could be just like a scratch or anything. You won't realize how important it is to build that barrier, because as much as the skin goes through every day, especially your face, because your entire body is covered, your face is just out there facing absolutely everything. Pollution, wind, like nature, all forms. You don't realize how you need to protect that barrier. You need to look after it. That's why even in Asian countries like China, Korea and all that, they literally have like face masks, like where only your eyes are seeing the big ball and the sun and all of that. I think that's really cool, but that will never translate anywhere else in the world. Because as Indians, at least, we have that melanin production. Where our skin is relatively safe from the sun, but not entirely. You need sunscreen. Sunscreen is so important. And that's also another favorite of mine. Like, if it's a product, I would love sunscreen, especially a hydrating sunscreen, like the Beauty of Joseph sunscreen. I love that product. It's hydrating, and it's just so calming because I break out easily.
Yeah.
So I need something that's just, like, calming. It's lovely cook skin.
Wallace, yeah, thank you for that wonderful note. We have almost come to the end of it, but I do have to ask you, which I asked our guest, yes. What is the one book and one movie that changed your life in no particular order? And if you have any of the quotes I've asked.
One book that I read, a film when I was really young, that I absolutely loved was this book called Butterfly Lie. I think I'm saying it right and say the right name, but I was really up by that. And it was about just a little lie who, a like, who was lost and then like a kid found it, Darth Vader and so. I loved watching movies like Free Willy and like animal based stuff. So I loved anything related to animals and just like rescuing animals, helping animals, anything like that. Movie, dude, there's so many. I feel like being in the industry, watching movies, I really love like. From sappy rom-coms to like chick flicks to like murder documentaries. It's interesting. All of it is interesting. Recently, there's a show that's come out called The Penguin. That's like based in Gotham City and all of that. So the thing is, it's kind of ruined it for me being in this industry because I'm going to notice the makeup. I'm going to notice the lighting, the way certain things are shot because I've been on set. I've seen the way the directors, the cinematographers work it on that. So I know why a certain shot in some cases is taken a certain way. So that like kind of ruins it for me, but also it's so interesting to see the way some like artists work. And I say artists, I don't mean just the actors or the makeup artists. I mean like directors, because those are also artists, like the cinematographers, those are like crazy artists, the music producers. Oh my God, when you see the way the background music, so things, especially the only thing that comes to my head when I think about background looks scores is horror movies, because I love watching horror movies and I've worked on multiple horror movies. So seeing the way the composers come up with the differences, even when there's just dead silence, there's actually something filling that space. It could be the sound of air. It could be like heavy air sound. You wouldn't even realize it, but that is so eerie, like creating that, like, you know, just goosebumps and one of that. So that's pretty cool, Kumi.
Well, this is so lovely that you shared this with us. And I was very fortunate. And when you explained the passion behind Aura Bobby, I couldn't wait. Could I say I now fodder for the words? Or the day.
Yeah, sure.
But it was very fascinating to see from your point of view and your admiration towards it and the Gotham City and the penguins and animals and the makeup and your love for colors and art and beauty. And all of this was such wonderful topics to discuss and touch upon. And I'm very grateful that you gave us this time. And thank you.